Hi, everyone. Thank you for being with America Trends this hour. I'm Amy Fuller, and you are with the U2 America TV network, or you might be listening on Biz Talk Radio. Welcome to you. We are going to have some trending topics in a moment, but first want to tell you we are going to talk to Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health, a few topics, including the strife, the mental anguish, the PTSD that still occurs for people who lived through 9/11, people who may not have even been in the region but lost loved ones. There's a lot that goes into that. We're going to chat about that in just a few moments. Also, Bartmore Coys, who is a former undersecretary to President Bush, is going to talk about what he went through that day, some inside information, so stay tuned for all that. One more thing trending in the news, the White House is taking action regarding the homeless crisis in Los Angeles and beyond, really. President Trump is vowing to get the homeless off the streets and into government housing facilities. White House officials, along with staff from the Department of Housing and Urban Development and the Domestic Policy Council, are in California meeting with officials in LA and in other urban areas. They are talking and they are touring homeless encampments. They're reportedly putting plans in place to tackle the trash, the rats, the sewage, and the return of medieval diseases. Earlier this year, Dr. Drew Pinsky said the public health situation in America's second largest city was in utter turmoil. 1.5% of the rats in LA now carry bubonic plague. If that figure hits 2%, this disease will start jumping to humans, according to experts. Memorials in New York, D.C., and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and beyond, of course, as the nation marks the anniversary of 9/11. 2,996 lives lost on that day in 2001. Former Undersecretary to President Bush, Bartmore Coys, once again, is going to be here to talk about that. Also, in Washington, President Trump spoke at that particular memorial and said, if anyone dares to strike our land, we will respond with the full measure of American power and the iron will of the American spirit.
Nobody really knew what happened. There was great confusion. I was looking out of a window from a building in Midtown Manhattan, directly at the World Trade Center, when I saw a second plane at a tremendous speed go into the second tower. It was then that I realized the world was going to change. I was no longer going to be, and it could never, ever be, that innocent place that I thought it was. Soon after, I went down to Ground Zero with men who worked for me to try to help in any little way that we could. We were not alone. So many others were scattered around trying to do the same. They were all trying to help. But for the families who join us, this is your anniversary of personal and permanent loss. It's the day that has replayed in your memory 1,000 times over. The last kiss, the last phone call, the last time hearing those precious words, I love you. Then the attack. The anguish of knowing your family member had boarded one of these flights or was working in the World Trade Center or serving right here at the Pentagon. You waited, you prayed, you answered that most dreaded call, and your life changed forever. To each of you, the First Lady and I are united with you in grief. We come here in the knowledge that we cannot erase the pain or reverse the evil of that dark and wretched day. But we offer you all that we have, our unwavering loyalty, our undying devotion, and our eternal pledge that your loved ones will never, ever be forgotten. On this solemn day of remembrance, our thoughts also turn to the 200,000 valiant soldiers, sailors, airmen, Coast Guardsmen, and Marines who are now at this very moment stationed overseas. We do not seek conflict, but if anyone dares to strike our land, we will respond with the full measure of American power and the iron will of the American spirit. And that spirit is unbreakable.
2,996 lives were lost on 9/11 in 2001. There's nothing like it in all of American history. And we really should not forget. Every year we come together and we have these memorials around the nation, especially at the Pentagon in D.C., in New York City, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. In so many instances, people, passengers, people that were inside buildings, first responders, showed the greatest American spirit, the greatest of us. And we celebrate them and remember them on this day. We are glad here on America Trends right now to have Bart Marcois, who happened to be in the administration during that time in 2001. He was an undersecretary for President Bush. And Bart, we say welcome back, and it's going to be so interesting to have your perspective on what it was like on that day. Were you in D.C. specifically?
I was. In fact, if I had left for work at my usual time, I would have been under the Pentagon, under the plane of the Pentagon, right about the moment the plane flew in. But because of the news that had taken place, I stayed a little bit later to see what was going on and listen to what was going on before I went in. I actually, at that time, was in between administration positions. I had been a career diplomat stationed in the Middle East for many years. And then I had left and had gone out to become an advisor to an allied government here in Washington for a few years, the government of Kuwait. And after that, I was waiting, in fact, to go into the Bush administration at that time. I had planned to go in that fall and thought that my appointment would be coming through within a couple of months. When the attacks took place, I felt like I needed to stay where I was for a while. And so it was a very interesting experience because I was advising an Arab government with a, you know, majority Muslim, a 99% Muslim population, on the day that 19 Muslim Arabs attacked us. And the first concern of the Kuwaiti government was to say, look, you guys stood by us in our hour of need. We want to stand by you. What can we do? How can we express that? So Kuwaiti students just voluntarily came, Kuwaiti students in America lined up to donate blood. They ended up not needing to because there were not enough survivors. But in that first day, everybody thought there are going to be terrible, you know, needs, a great need for blood donations. But almost everybody that was wounded was killed. And but that was the first instinct of the Kuwaitis, was to give their blood. And when a student, he was a member, the president of a local, you know, Kuwait Student Society chapter, he called me up and he said, we want to do this. You know, we're doing it. And I said, what made you think of this? He said, because your sons, the sons of your mothers and fathers, came to our country and their blood flowed on our battlefield. And we consider this a great honor to give our blood to, you know, maybe save the lives of sons, daughters, mothers, fathers that were injured by somebody. A very touching experience. We ran ads on the day of commemoration saying, if I remember correctly, Kuwait offers or expresses condolences and reaffirms its faith in the resilience of the American people. May God bless the souls of those who died and their loved ones. It was a very touching thing. When I read the text to the advertising woman at the New York Post, she broke down in tears. Neither of us could speak for several minutes. It was it was a very touching experience. And, you know, what I most remember in the are the days afterward. There were no airplanes flying, and you think you don't notice the airplanes overhead. They're there all the time, and when they're gone, you notice their absence. I remember the unearthly quiet of the skies, the land, everything during that time. Even the roads were empty. On that morning, I had to turn around. Traffic was absolutely stopped. It was stopped at a dead still. And fortunately, I was near a break where the police cars go through the Jersey barriers. And I figured out something must be happening. So I turned around through the Jersey barrier, and there was absolutely nobody coming from the other side. It was eerie. And it felt like the end of the world. But the next day, Americans did what Americans have always done. We came together, we picked up, we rebuilt, we started establishing a way to care for those who were affected. We looked at what were the immediate needs. In our neighborhood, we have neighbors across the street who are Arabs, Muslims. I went over to them and I said, look, you were the first people to knock on our door and welcome us to the neighborhood. What happened here is awful. Please let me know if anything happens and if you suffer any difficulty. And they smiled and gave me a hug and they said, you are the third person to come and tell us that. And everybody in the neighborhood ended up going separately there to say, we don't hold you responsible for this. We understand the difference between those Arabs and you, between those Muslims and you. And I see people on the left that try to make some sort of political hay out of the fact that we were attacked, and they try to blame America for responding. And I don't think there has ever been a more restrained response to such a vicious attack as came from the United States. We didn't go and attack Saudi Arabia. We didn't attack the countries that these people came from. We took our time. We developed the intelligence, we found out who they were, we found out the backing, and we went and we killed those people that planned the attack. Bart, we did not kill innocents.
I'm going to keep you for another segment. We'll talk more about our response and have we forgotten? We'll chat about this when we come right back with Bart Marquardt.
Where were you when the world stopped turning?
Some people did something, said a freshman congresswoman from Minnesota, to support and justify the creation of CARE. Today I am here to respond to you exactly who did what to whom. Madam, objectively speaking, we know who and what was done. There is no uncertainty about that. Why your confusion? On that day, 19 Islamic terrorists, members of Al-Qaeda, killed over 3,000 people and caused billions of dollars of economic damage. Is that clear? But as to whom? I was attacked. Your relatives and friends were attacked. Our constitutional freedoms were attacked. And our nation's founding on Judeo-Christian principles were attacked. That's what some people did.
Nicholas Harris Jr. lost his mother in the 9/11 attacks. That is him speaking on September 11th, 2019. Had a special message for Ilhan Omar, who said she believed that some people did something, in her words. And those have resonated with people who have said, how have we forgotten what happened just 18 years ago? Bart Marquardt is in the administration of President Bush, and he was transferring into the administration around this time, Bart, but you were in D.C. Wanted to get your response to Nicholas Harris Jr. and then find out exactly where you were and what you were doing when you first heard the news about these attacks, which at first no one could understand exactly what was happening.
I jumped for joy today when I heard him say that. I thought it's about time. I find, I'm fluent in Arabic. I lived in the Middle East. I have deep personal friendships with people who are Arabs, who are Muslims. I find Ilhan Omar despicable. I find her contemptible. She's like a dog that bites the hand that feeds it. I think she's a terrible person, and one of the worst things she's done is to stand up there and try to play some sort of phony victim card because of 9/11, and it just shows the absolute poverty of mind that she has, and the selfishness and the self-centered focus that she can't even stop to think about people who are different from her, or even stop to think about, as Mr. Harris said, all these people, every American who loves American was a victim, America was a victim of that attack. And if she really cared, she would be out there fighting the extremism instead of defending it and justifying it and pretending that it doesn't exist. But that day, when my first feeling was that I had personally failed when I heard the news, because I had been warning for several years, starting when I was a diplomat stationed in Kuwait. The Kuwaitis loved us. We had liberated them, and they were a grateful ally. I wrote an article last year about it, and I talked about what it was like being a diplomat stationed in Kuwait after liberation. Our old ladies.
We have that. Just wanted to mention, we have that on OpsLens.com, where you are a constant contributor, as you are here on America Trends. But wanted to give that link to our viewers and listeners so they can go there and find out more. And again, your special, special vantage point, having been in the Middle East. Sorry, but continue. Just wanted to show that for you.
Thank you. But I felt like I had failed because I had been warning about Islamic extremism starting from the middle of my first year in Kuwait. I remember a woman came to me and she said, listen, we are sending our sons to your country and they're coming back with long beards and short dishdashas. The dishdasha is the robe, that the white robe that the men wear. Sometimes they call it a thobe. And the Islamists, the extremists, don't cut their beards. They leave them long and ragged like Osama bin Laden had his. And their robes don't go all the way to their ankles. They come down just below their knees. And it's a sign of piety and extremism among them. She said, they go to America to study for 4 years and they come back with long beards and short dishdashes. What are you people doing to them over there?
They come here and are turned in some fashion. This is what she was saying to you?
Yes, and it wasn't Americans turning them that way. It was other Arabs who were here who were preying upon these young boys, 18, 19 years old, homesick, lonely, wanted to speak their own language. And there are these friendship centers and, you know, hometown centers set up, a lot like the Chinese Confucius Institutes that have been in the news a lot. And they turned them into extremists while they were here. And I was writing cables about it back to Washington. When I came back here, one of the reasons I resigned my commission was that the Clinton administration would pay no attention at all to troubles in the Islamic world. They didn't want to hear about it. And the Kuwaitis, at least, were serious about getting rid of Saddam Hussein. And I thought, okay, you know, here's a place to stand, and I can do something. And I had been meeting with administration officials, congressional staff, warning them that Islamic extremism was growing and growing, and that there were Sunni extremists that were like Hezbollah. And I could not get people to pay attention enough to actually do anything about it. And when the planes hit, I thought, wow, this is what I was talking about. And I didn't try hard enough. I should have tried harder. I should have pushed harder. That was my first feeling. It's a very personal experience for me. I have a friend whose office was in the Pentagon, and they were doing renovations on that wing. And he usually went to his office in spite of the renovations. He was a full bird colonel, and he had been appointed as a deputy undersecretary of the Army. And he had a great window office overlooking the highway there. The plane that came in would have crashed right into his office. He would have been incinerated in a heartbeat had he been in his office that day. Wow. He had a TDY, a temporary duty for 2 days away from there, so he wasn't there. Yeah, right there to the right, just to the left of the right edge of the scorch marks. That was his office on the fourth floor. Unbelievable stories over and over. I had a friend who was on American Airlines Flight 77, Barbara Olson. She was the wife of Ted Olson, and she was the real intellectual powerhouse, if you ask me, behind Ted Olson. He's not to take anything away from him, but he's never been the same since she was killed. He's remarried, but he's turned sharply to the left over the years. He used to be this absolute, I don't want to use the word powerhouse again, but that's what comes to mind, a champion for conservative causes. He's now well to the left of center politically because she was his anchor. And she died that day. She was on that airplane that crashed into the Pentagon, returning from a conference where she'd been speaking. I believe it was in Idaho. I heard from somebody today who was working with her at that conference and said, I realize now that I was one of the last four people that she called.
Bart. I'm so sorry for your loss. We could spend the whole show with you talking about this. In 20 seconds, what should we learn and take away from today and what we are marking?
I wish we could remember the unity that we all felt. Nobody criticized one another. Hollywood went silent. We all got along because we suddenly realized we were all Americans. The media and social media have learned to monetize hate, and they're turning us against one another. We need to resist that and be united again as we were.
Well said. Thank you, Bart.
The last 4 days, we have hit our enemy harder than they have ever been hit before, and that will continue. And if for any reason they come back to our country, we will go wherever they are and use power the likes of which the United States has never used before. And I'm not even talking about nuclear power. They will never have seen anything like what will happen to them. No enemy on earth can match the overwhelming strength, skill, and might of the American armed forces.
President Trump speaking at the Pentagon today, outside the Pentagon, at a memorial for 9/11. We are marking this occasion that happened 18 years ago when most every American watched as the worst terror attack ever occurred on U.S. soil. It unfolded in television. They watched in real time or in repeated replays. That up-close view of 3,000 people jolted Americans out of the sense of security we'd enjoyed since at least World War II. And there are thousands of people who had family, friends, colleagues who perished, who were hurt, let alone the people who watched it and have been just affected ever since. Many of the people who were there who went into rescue, traumatized with serious consequences. We are talking to Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health at mainstreammentalhealth.org. And we hear over and over again, Dr. Huber, though people survived, lives were so changed. And we welcome you to discuss this today on America Trends.
Thank you so much. Well, of course, America will never be the same. And I think as a country, we kind of are suffering from our own version of post-traumatic stress disorder. Forget about, you know, everything else we've ever heard about it. This shocked our country and it hit us to the core. We shut down air travel. You know, it was the first time I can remember in my life not being able to look up in the sky and see a plane fly or hear a plane overhead. And it's continued to reverberate. I think a lot of people are forgetting where we've been, where we come from. And I think remembering this day is an important thing for us to do. And if we can continue on like we were on the 12th of September after this happened in 2001 and how we were united and we all were American, it didn't matter. It didn't matter race, gender, anything. We were American and that's what we got to stay with.
There was a certain beauty in the day after when we did, as you say, come together. And it didn't matter race, creed, ethnicity, politics. We were all Americans. And we always said, never forget, never forget. And people then who lived through it, though, you can't possibly imagine how it will affect you in the future. You know, watching TV on days like this, you have anecdotes about people. One woman I heard, she was in the midst of one of the towers in the fire. She heard people that needed her help. She grabbed them. She was on the second floor. She threw one person out of the window. That person broke their leg and lived. She found another one that was crying. She threw them out, broke a leg and lived. Then she jumped out and she survived, but she was never the same, and her marriage fell apart. And it was just something that, even if you do survive, there are so many struggles still to come.
Absolutely. And you know, I've been blessed. I've been back and forth to New York, and every time I go there, there's just something special about being back there and seeing how that city has, you know, it's still got a scar, but it's recovering. And it's amazing how the people move forward. And they don't forget about it. And that's one of the beauties of New York City, man, resilience and energy. And I think the rest of us can take a lesson from that.
That is an interesting point, too. And the individual psyche, but then the cumulative psyche of America. Up until that time, we really thought, you know, something like this couldn't really happen. This is just something from a movie. And how surreal was it that day to watch it, let alone if you were in the midst of it in person? So what does that do to us as a nation? What did it do, and how are we now? Oh boy, these pictures just,
yes.
You know, in these pictures, Doc, it's something where at the time we said we cannot be showing these over and over. And, you know, there's something about, oh, it's good TV and this is really what happened. But now, again, 18 years later, we have to see this and remember what went down so as not to repeat this, so as not to get complacent, so we can be on our guard and remember there are enemies out there who wish us terrible, terrible ill. So getting back to as a nation, how did our psyche turn that day, that week, and how have we changed since? Have we forgotten?
I think in a lot of ways we have forgotten, and it's very sad and scary to think. But you know, when we watch people and their disdain for the flag and what it means and those people who lost their lives. And we see people who, you know, put that in such a place of degradation, and it breaks my heart. I have multiple family members in military active to this day. I have friends who come back from horrible situations and are suffering to this day from post-traumatic stress disorder. I have patients. You know, it's just, and the stories I hear over and over and over, and then people to just kind of throw away what they've sacrificed and what has led this country to be such a great place. And, you know, it's one of the things that troubled me as a university professor, how the further we got away, the less they seem to think of it as being a serious situation, and they tended to minimize it. Then even at some points, the student bodies were coming out and saying, oh, it was our fault. And, you know, that's like blaming the victim for being raped. And it's really not something that I'm proud of. But, you know, that's where we're at. I think we need to remember this. I'm proud that, you know, I'm part of a show like America Trends that is actually bringing this back up. Yeah, it hits the news and the airwaves and like that. But, you know, we need to be talking about it more often and more frequently.
And you have to think and have to wonder and have to embrace the fact that there are people out there that say, oh, America, you did this to yourself. What is that about? And Doc, also, you know, it also brings me back to certain things that you and I discuss time and time again. When something like this happens, some people become victims and are traumatized forever, or they blame America, or they go sign up to go to war and take care of business.
Well, and they stand up, and they stand up at home. They don't have to go off to war. And, you know, a close personal friend of mine was actually discharged about, you know, a few months before this happened because of he was openly homosexual.
Don't ask, and they don't tell, correct.
Don't ask, don't
right.
tell. And, you know, at the same time, you know, his friends were going off to war essentially after this, and he was crushed. He didn't know which way to turn. And, you know, it's sad that we're in that kind of a situation. You know, we're Americans. We should be able to stand up for America, regardless of who you are and what your belief systems are. And I think that that helped, you know, as bad as it sounds, that helped us for a short time to come together. And we don't need another incident like this. We need to remember, you know, this is a scar on America. We need to look at that scar, just like if you, you know, have stretch marks from delivering your baby or a C-section, and, you know, that you should be proud of. You're a mother. This is part of the birth of our nation, birth of an individual. And we need to keep moving forward with that.
Probably worth talking about when we come back from the break, Doc, why some people did blame ourselves, so to speak, about this. It's just very strange. Also, one of these studies, these professors, these people who study the impact of such trauma, said some individuals with no direct connection to 9/11 exhibited symptoms that experts had previously assumed were the result of direct exposure. Chat about this some more when we come back.
Remember me.
Have you forgotten when those towers fell? We had neighbors still inside, going through a living hell. And you say we shouldn't worry about Bin Laden. Have you forgotten? It took all the footage off my TV.
What it would have been like to have been in the administration at that point, to be George Bush. My goodness. We are with Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health. Dr. John, where were you on 9/11/2001?
I was in Miami, Florida, and I was working with Miami-Dade County Public Schools, and I had several friends who were firefighters in Miami-Dade, and the next day they were in New York City. So it hit pretty close to home, and then basically for the next couple of weeks, we shut down Miami-Dade County Public Schools because New York is such a connected city with them. And we went around from school to school and debriefing kids and talking. And it was a rough time, definitely.
Happens to be where President George Bush was during the attacks, reading to school children when that infamous whisper in his ear came up and you saw that look on his face. And here's what was happening in New York City. Not once, but twice, a second tower going down, and people knew right then that this was not an accident, that America was under attack. And we will never forget the sight of people jumping from buildings to their death to get away from fire, people running with these looks and expressions on their faces, and they have been changed ever since then, Doctor. You know, at the time, we had to, people like you had to say, we've got to stop watching these images over and over on TV. We've had enough to deal with, but you want to stay alert, and
we're
alarmed by it, and there has to be some kind of balance, I guess. Even today, 18 years later, you know, these images come back and we think about them and it hurts all over again. And again, we're not to forget, but sometimes it's just too much for certain people, I guess. I don't know, Doc, what do you say?
You know, it's harsh. It's extremely difficult. I mean, I remember watching those videos because, I mean, every news channel, it was there 24/7. They just had cameras, you know, the minute this happened. And we sat there in dismay and watched pieces of paper falling out of the sky and realizing those weren't pieces of paper. Those were desks. Those were couches. Those were people. And it definitely changed my life. And I think the horror of it, you know, is something that as bad as it is, we need to be reminded. Nobody is impervious to being attacked or having harm done to us. You know, we had the blessing of being surrounded on two sides by ocean, and it was very difficult for people to come at us. And that has proven to no longer be an effective barrier.
Again, we talked about how the day after and the hours after, people so came together and were just taking care of each other. And I know my pastor talked about people came to church. There was the just by the thousands, they came to church.
Yes.
Then and were just leaning on the Lord. And then people fall away and, you know, we go and do what we do and we live our lives. And that sort of brings us to another topic that we were going to chat about today, a new study revealing that religion can help anxious young adults. And, you know, for believers, we do feel like, well, it's obvious it helps. The Lord has you in the palm of his hand. But I think some of this evidence we've seen in the past shows that, you know, sometimes any religion, whatever you grab onto, can help you just fall away from those anxieties. What did this study say this time, Doc?
Well, basically, you know, any religion at all, as long as it's, you know, bound by peace and it's not, you know, about torturing people and things like that. You know, unfortunately, there are cults and some bad situations. But otherwise, religiosity gives us something that we grab hold of. It's called hope. And hope gives us the ability to carry on and to move forward. It is an amazing tool we use for resilience, to be able to wake up the next day and keep moving. You know, the hope that we can make this a better world, a better place, and that it's all for naught. No, the hope that it is for something we can move on and have a better life. And that's essentially what it, you know, in a nutshell, what it's trying to tell us. And that belief set is that we can triumph over the worst atrocities and the worst evil. Mm-hmm. And without hope, you know, we might as well go back to the caves and play with the bears and the tigers and everything else like that.
Yeah. For more information, you can look up, it's a Christian research firm called the Barna Group, and they studied over 15,000 people and found that faith can certainly help when dealing with mental health concerns. The largest and the first global look at what is called the connected generation, those from 18 to 35, and by connected, I know we mean social media.
Yes.
Doc, we've got about 2 minutes left and wanted to just see if you had any more comments on that or 9/11 or what you were doing on your podcast and with your nonprofit Mainstream Mental Health.
Well, you know, we are looking towards another fiscal year and you know, we've got our fundraiser coming up October 20th. We're going to be here in Austin, Texas, doing a comedy show, kind of a contrast to what we're talking about today. you know, it's good to be able to laugh. And that was one of the hardest things to do after 9/11. And so we want to try and remember that. And we do it every year. This is our third year in a row we've done this. And, you know, to be able to laugh at something as devastating as mental health issues and overcome them again with that hope is a marvelous thing. And we want to just remind everybody that, you know, we got to keep moving forward. We're gonna overcome all this. And this, we're making this a better country every day, and it'll continue to be that way. We just got to keep pushing in the right direction.
That was actually a huge topic during the week and the days after 9/11. I know you probably remember the producers with Nathan Lane and Matthew Broderick was all the rage on Broadway, won all these awards. And for a time, they were dark and said, you know, we've got to just, you know, let this simmer for a minute. And then they said, you know, we've got to go back and entertain people and let people laugh and not, you know, it's a cliche, but not let the terrorist win. But that's completely defining of America. And so I appreciate, you know, we love hearing about this ordeal you have coming up in a few weeks. Can you give us a date again and where to get tickets, Doc?
It is at Cap City Comedy Club, October 20th. And it is, you go to Cap City Comedy Club and look up, we actually call it Texas's Funniest Reporter. We get all the reporters. And of course, we didn't invite you because you're in California, but you're more than welcome to show up if you want. We can put you on stage. You can tell a few jokes.
Oh my, oh my. Doc is a clinical forensic psychologist. He runs Mainstream Mental Health and he does all this. He really keeps himself busy and giving back to others. And Doc, we can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your expertise. We'll see you next time. Thanks again.
Thank you.
We'll see you back here on America Trends right after this. You're with U2 America and Biz Talk Radio.
Have you forgotten? Have you forgotten?
Welcome back. Glad to have you along as we mark 9/11, 18 years after this just fateful date. And just so glad to have our guests who had their special insight. Barbara Coyce, who was part of the Bush administration, former undersecretary there and career diplomat. And just some of the things he had to add to the dialogue about all this. And also Dr. John Huber of Mainstream Mental Health talking about the psyche, the trauma on our psyches that it can have as a nation and individuals. Even if you weren't there and even if you didn't have family, it affected all of us. And so our hearts and prayers go out to those survivors and family members indeed. I want to remind you, you can find us 24/7 on our website for U2America.com and also Biz Talk Radio. And we'd love it if you would click through and join us and find us on social media as well. We have all our podcasts from Biz Talk Radio there. We stream live, and then also you can find, you know, the under Featured, you can find our past shows. And also a lot of other great programming on U2America we'd love to share. Friend us on Facebook, like us, connect with us on Twitter. We'd all like to hang out and be friends. And again, we want to finally tonight, there is there's a new trailer for The Joker, which is coming out. It is out in theaters October 1st, and we're going to give you a first look at the very latest from The Joker, the latest in this installment.
Can you please stop bothering my kid?
Sorry.
Arthur, I have some bad news for you. This is the last time we'll be meeting.
You don't listen, do you? You just ask the same questions every week. How's your job? Are you having any negative thoughts? All I have are negative thoughts.
In a world where everyone thinks they could do my job, check out this guy.
When I was a little boy and told people I was going to be a comedian, everyone laughed at me. Well, no one's laughing now.
You can say that again, pal.
It's so awful, isn't it?
For my whole life, I didn't know if I even really existed. But I do. And people are starting to notice.
You think this is funny? Is this a joke to you?
Murray, one small thing.
Yeah.
When you bring me out, can you introduce me as Joker?